Sometimes this is because they are simply no longer interested in the Earth, but often it is because they have discovered by painful experience that either their ideas become but the merest travesty of the original when impressed upon the minds of men, or, far worse, they are taken and devoted to evil instead of to useful purposes. Thus good ideas of art are extremely liable to suffer the former fate, while scientific or engineering ideas, being in some measure more mundane, are often properly grasped, but at the same time turned to evil uses by the perverse nature of men. Thus it is that a large body of spirits refuse absolutely to pass on their discoveries to men. The result is that many societies belonging to Group 3 impose the rule that no discovery made by any member of the society while a member may be communicated either to a mortal or to any spirit who is a member of any society in Group 4. Not all societies, however, impose this rule, but leave it to the choice of the member whether or not he shall belong to a society in Group 4. All, however, abstain, as societies, from inspiring men. This work is left in the hands of Group 4. I may as well add that medical societies are particularly numerous in Group 4. J. Do you always belong to a society if you wish to inspire? Can't individuals do this work quite as well by themselves? Gone West, H.J.L. It could be done, but not as well. In practice we find that it is better to have a society, though often quite a small one. Now about this college. It is under the control of a master who is a second in command. Then, to assist them, there is a committee with a chairman, J. W., like a Freemason's lodge, a master, senior and junior warden, H. J. L. I don't know much about Freemasons, but that's rather the idea. The members of this college consist of three divisions, and we are promoted from the first to the second, and from the second to the third, according as we learn the great spiritual truths. From the third or highest division the committee is elected. The various officers are chosen by the head of the college from this committee. J. It's really rather like a Freemason's lodge with its three degrees, and so on. H. J. L. Very likely. Probably the idea was inspired from this side. Still, it's a very natural arrangement, and somewhat similar to college on earth with its first, second, and third year men and its fellows. J. W. Have you anything corresponding to an examination? H. J. L. Not really. What happens is that our teachers, when they consider we have learnt all that is to be learnt in that degree, if so you like to call it, send us on to the next set of teachers. On entering this new degree we are received with a certain amount of ceremony. These divisions, you quite understand, have nothing to do with the divisions of this plane. We are still in the division of half-belief even when in the third degree in our college. That's why I rather jumped at the word degree to avoid confusion. J. W. Which degree are you in? H. J. L. Still in the lowest, but I hope soon to be promoted to the next. Now it is time you returned. J. W. Why, I have only been here quite a short time. H. J. L. Nevertheless, you've been here long enough. I seem to be caught up by a whirlwind and to be swept out into space. Everything became black. I appeared to be whirling round in great circles which steadily grew less and less. Then I lost consciousness. J. W. Gone West, Chapter 28, A Hospital on the Spirit Plane, Transvision, etc., May 4th. 1914, I found myself in H. J. L.S. room. He began, I went to see one of our mental hospitals recently. J. W. Hospitals. I thought you said there was no pain here. You said it was left on the threshold of hell. H. J. L. Nor is there any pain. Still, some spirits come here whose minds have for long been clouded, and these need treatment. Mental cases may be roughly divided on earth as follows: ideates, 2. Lunatics. The latter fall into at least three divisions: 1. Lunacy caused by physical defects, a. early, b. later in life; 2. Lunacy caused by evil life, or at least evil passions; 3. lunacy caused by religious mania and such kindred mental disturbances and lack of balance, for example excessive sorrow. With regard to idiots, no. The cause is some kind of physical defect, and its result is that the individual to a greater or less extent comes here ignorant and in need of teaching. The less knowledge they possess, the lower they will start. If they have no knowledge even of God and a future life, they will go to the topmost division of hell. You remember, however, there is no real suffering there. There they will be taught in special schools, not with either the babes or the evil souls who are progressing. Some idiots, however, have been able to acquire some knowledge of God and a future life, and may come to us. Contrarywise, they may have sufficient intelligence to be responsible for turning their back on faith, but these are rare. The whole of this group, however, owe their mental difficulty to some physical, not spiritual defect, and therefore, once clear of the physical, need teaching, but not medical treatment in any form. Group 2, the lunatic, includes A and B. In the case of the former, it all depends what stage of spiritual development they had attained before the physical defect occurred which rendered them insane. In the case of those thus afflicted in early life, it is probable that they will have to go to the elementary schools in the seventh division of hell, though, of course, they may know enough to enter our realm and go to the secondary schools. In all probability, however, they will not have had time to commit many sins for which they will have to undergo penance. Those afflicted later will have had time alike to acquire knowledge and therefore faith, and some time to do evil for which they will have to suffer. Their spiritual development, in short, will be that which they had reached when the insanity came upon them. Of course, many so-called lunatics, even when lunacy is due solely to a physical defect or injuries, are not completely lacking in responsibility for their deeds. Often only part of the brain is affected, and in that case they may appear normal except on one or two points. These shades of insanity are settled automatically. The spirit feels no need of remorse for offenses it had no intention of committing, and for which it cannot be responsible. It, of course, regrets any evil that may have been caused by its being unable to control its body, just as a motorist would grieve if his motor ran away and hurt, gone west, someone, but that would not be the sense of moral guilt which would attach to him if the accident was due to his racing. Of course, there is no possibility of pretense here. This type of lunatic takes up his education at the point at which the accident occurred which deprived him of his reason. He will suffer for his misdeeds also up to that point, and after, so far as he was responsible. Mental treatment will not be necessary generally in these cases, merely education. Before passing to the next group, let me remind you that many so-called maniacs are really unfortunate beings who are obsessed by other spirits. For the crimes committed by these through the maniac's physical organism, the unfortunate man is, of course, not responsible directly. He may, however, have to suffer here for them indirectly, insofar as it was his evil life that allowed an evil spirit to take control. When the responsibility goes so far as invoking evil spirits to aid him in his nefarious purposes, as did the ancient wizards, the moral guilt is tremendous. This is indeed one of the worst crimes possible, for which mental derangement is but the commencement of retribution. This type of obsession naturally leads us to consider the cases 2 and 3. 2. Lunacy caused by evil life or at least passion. This group very largely goes to hell, but of course not all. It is these latter who chiefly need treatment in our hospitals as well as ordinary education. Spiritual pride and even commonplace conceit are potent factors for rendering people insane as well as the more obvious vices, such as drink and lust. These sufferers must not be confused with the cases of obsession just mentioned. Number 3 are often very difficult cases with which to deal. Of course, the simpler forms soon right themselves. Thus sorrow soon loses its sting here, and any physical defects caused by it are left behind with the body. Very little treatment would be necessary in such a case. On the other hand, religious mania is often very difficult to eliminate. It is none the easier because such persons are often strong believers, and would ordinarily go to that realm. They have, However, to come to the hospital in our realm and they remain till cured. It would be useless for them to go to the realm of belief without acts, for they would be utterly incapable of seeing any good in any other religion until the religious mania and its attendant evils have been eradicated. Then, of course, they go to their natural realm of existence. Without spending any more of your time discussing these matters, I will now proceed to describe one of these hospitals. I was taken thither by a man who during life had been a great mental specialist. The building was placed amid the most beautiful surroundings, which seemed to breathe an atmosphere of peace and rest. I mentioned this impression to my friend the doctor, who replied, "Quite so, quiet, soothing surroundings are the first essentials for dealing with any kind of mental disorder." The gardens surrounding the hospital contained broad stretches of lawn interspersed with beautiful woods, and everywhere the soft notes of rippling or falling water were faintly audible. Ever and anon through the trees I caught the glint of water tinged with the evening glow which is ever present here. Amid these woods, walking about the lawns and boating on the lakes, I saw many of the patients. Passing along a handsome avenue, we at length came in sight of the hospital. It was a splendid building in the Renaissance style, with verandas along the front, and was surrounded upon all sides by velvety lawns and flower beds. Numerous basins with fountains playing and statues of various kinds decorated the lawns. A woman, seated on a low stool, was playing a harp, while reclining on couches round her were many patients of both sexes. Gone west, we passed into the building itself, and I found that in some ways the institution was arranged on similar lines to those of the houses of refuge in hell. Thus there was a secondary school attached, and most of the patients attended the school as part of their course of treatment. Further, there were concert halls and a theater, chapels for several different religious bodies, an art gallery, and so forth. My medical friend explained, "One of our chief objects is to divert the mind of the patients from too much concentration upon themselves. Many were very selfish or at any rate self-centered folk. Religious mania or excessive grief is likewise the cause of many of these cases being here. Wholesome, soothing amusements, which will dispel the morbid trait in their characters, are therefore of the greatest value. As to direct treatment, we very largely employ suggestion, hypnotism, and magnetism. See. We entered what on earth would have been called an operating theater. Here, two doctors were busy magnetizing a woman patient. She was stretched on a bed, clad in a plain grayish-white robe drawn in at the waist by a girdle, and similar to the costume they all wear here. One doctor was standing behind her with his hand gently resting on her forehead, while the other stood at her feet, but without touching her. Both men seemed to be concentrating their wills on her and gazing into her face. They made no movement or any sign that they were aware of our presence. I was able to perceive that from each there appeared to flow out a kind of faint light, and that this light was being focused, as it were, on her head. We passed into another room where a violin was being played to soothe the man who was tossing in mental distress upon the bed. I said to the doctor, "I noticed that here the sexes mix much more than they do round where I dwell." "Not really so. There is very little companionship here between the men and the women. Both, however, are necessary to aid in the work, especially as it found that better results from magnetism are obtained when the operator is of the opposite sex to the patient." We entered a third room and found a hypnotist at work. He was making passes over someone. As soon as he saw us, he bowed and explained that this patient could not eliminate from his mind the remembrances of a terrible accident for which he was to a certain extent responsible. The remembrance of this had turned his brain on earth, and the ill effects were not yet entirely removed from his mind. "I am hypnotizing him for a time, so as to compel him to forget this terrible experience, and so by degrees we shall restore peace to his troubled mind." Leaving him, we passed into a comparatively small room in which was a patient lying on a couch. My medical friend said, "This is a strange case, and shows how strong is the power of the mind and even the remembrance of the body after death. This woman's mental affliction in life took the form of a belief that she was a cripple unable to walk. There was nothing organically wrong, yet by degrees, as this hallucination grew upon her, She became crippled and misshapen even as she is now. Had the disease been a physical one, she would have left it behind her at death, but it is purely a mental one, due to a morbid nature which in life seemed to take a perverted joy in gazing at the misshapen and crippled. This she did not from any motive of sorrow or wish to help the sufferers, but out of a morbid curiosity. For the rest, however, she was neither a total unbeliever nor yet evil by nature. Few cases such as this come to us here. They are, I understand, more common in hell. I, H. J. L. inquired, how do you treat her? He. Mainly by magnetism and mental suggestion. We are striving to prove to her that her spiritual body need not reproduce the defects of the physical one. Most spirits, gone west, readily grasp that fact, but her mind has become so overclouded that she cannot as yet grasp it. However, even the most obstinate cases soon yield to treatment here. What does seem to take a long time is the education which is afterwards necessary. We passed through other rooms, through long wards and into lecture rooms where doctors were giving lectures on medical subjects. I, H, J, L, inquired of my friend whether there was not an operating theatre as in an earthly hospital. Oh dear, no. He replied. We have got long past those clumsy methods here. Of course, some operations are required on earth owing to the material nature of a physical body, although there are far more operations than are really necessary. Here, however, the spirit body yields to and needs much subtler methods. The only place you find anything approaching an operating theatre is in hell. I shuddered at the horror of the idea underlying those simple words. It would take me too long to give you any further details of this wonderful hospital, but perhaps I should say that I was surprised to find how large a part religious services played in the treatment. We don't attend religious services to any large extent in this realm, that is our principal duty in the next realm, but services formed quite a marked feature of the treatment, I perceived, and in this it approximated to the house of refuge in hell and to the ordinary course of life in the realm of belief without acts. Many of the services, I noticed, had quite an elaborate ritual, and evidently were designed expressly with the object of helping forward the mental healing of the patients who attended. A shadowy prototype on earth was that funny old service of touching and healing in the prayer book in the days of Queen Anne. Outside in the grounds we separated, and after thanking my medical friend, I returned here. Gone West, Chapter 29. Neither will they be persuaded though one rose from the dead. J. W. May we publish the names and details for identification given by P. Rhee himself and Barber. H. J. L. With regard to P. and Barber, I think there is no harm in giving the details about the latter. It was meant as a piece of conclusive evidence, and I think most would agree it is. With regard to P., matters are a little different. He feels it rather a hindrance already to keep sufficiently in touch with earth matters to send you his experiences, and does not want to do anything which might draw him back still further into earth conditions. If the details he has given were published, being a well-known man, you would have a number of carping, or at any rate inquisitive, persons constantly sending tests and expecting them to be answered. If P. agreed to answer those tests, he would at once be assailed by further ones. He would be constantly worried by them, and, therefore, dragged back into earth conditions. He wishes to be rid of earth trammels, and, instead, would find he had rebound himself with them. If he refused to answer further tests, people would at once say it was fraud. They would say, here are communications coining through which purport to be from Mr. P., and yet the entity either will not or cannot answer these simple questions as to his earth life. They would refuse to see that it is quite one thing to send a message through dealing with life here and another to put ourselves again in touch with our former earth life. You yourself believe us and do not bother us with unnecessary questions. You have not only had dates and other details of the lives of men quite unknown to you, but have also from W. A. received details of his private life not merely unknown to you, but in a large measure unintelligible even when given. These details have, however, been perfectly plain to M., and have convinced her of his identity, as she herself told you. It is, therefore, not with any wish to avoid giving evidence when the demand is reasonable that I hesitate to request P. to allow the details about him to be published. Talk the matter over with Mr. K. and then consult me again. With regard to Barbara, the same objections do not arise. He is not communicating through you, nor do we propose to let him. Neither is he interested in doing so, being otherwise engaged. If, therefore, anyone wanted to cross-question them, he would fail to get any reply, but this could hardly be taken as disproving the reality of our group of spirits. Is the matter now quite plain? J. W. Yes. I am sorry. If P. would agree, it would once and for all decide the question which still vexes people, whether the one identity does survive after death or not. I mean agree to be thoroughly cross-questioned, as you call it. H.J.L. Not a bit of it. Plenty of evidence has been sent through to prove that to any reasonable man. Even what we have given should be sufficient. And there have been still more striking examples where spirits have deliberately thrown back their own progress so as to prove even to the most obstinate unbeliever that there is a personal survival after death. But it is selfish and unreasonable to expect us continually to be doing that sort of thing, I mean delaying our own progress. No, Jack, many people do believe, but it is still true of many men, neither will they be persuaded though one rose from the dead. Now it's time you were off. Next instant I sank into oblivion. J. W. Gone West, Chapter 30, The Author's Adventure in the Park on the Spirit Plane, Transvision, etc., May 18, 1914. I again saw myself lying asleep on the bed, but this time did not feel nervous. The room seemed to get more and more distant and then grew nebulous. I seemed to be enveloped in a mist. And gradually this mist took shape and form, became solid, and lo, the landscape with which I was now familiar. Before me was stretched a beautiful tract of country bathed in a soft evening light. I floated down onto a grassy hill and saw below me in the valley the town in which H. J. L. now lived. Soon I was able to pick out the roofs of the college and turned my steps in that direction. The route I took led me through a beautiful wood, amid the branches of whose trees birds were singing merrily. As I drew nearer the town I saw the park with statuary and the sculpture gallery which I had seen before. I began to walk through the park, and I noticed how sweetly the flowers smelt. Large numbers of spirits were constantly passing me, and several gazed at me intently, as if they felt I was in some way different. At length two young men stopped and said, "Who are you, and are you dead? You do not look quite like one of us, and yet if you are not dead how come you here?" I replied, "No, I'm not dead, but somehow I have developed in such a way recently since my father-in-law died that I am able to come and visit him here and even carry away a remembrance of what I see." "Well, that's very funny. I wish I'd been able to do that," said one of them, "when I was alive. Can you visit any other planes of existence besides these?" the other inquired. "No," I replied, "but I meet others who have been selected by my father-in-law, and these give me accounts of their experiences in hell and in the plane above this, and also in the astral plane." "You're jolly lucky," the taller of the two, who had spoken first, cried. "We know practically nothing of either hell or the plane above, though, of course, we do know something of the astral plane. You might tell us something about them. Come, let us sit down by this fountain." I sat down with them and had just begun to relate some of the officer's adventures, when I saw H. J. L. hurrying towards me. He was evidently annoyed, and said, "Really, Jack, you ought to have known better than to sit down here chattering when the officer and I are waiting to get to business." The two strangers at once apologized and explained that it was their fault. H. J. L. answered, "That's all very well, and I know you meant no harm, but if you want that sort of information, come to me for it and you shall have it. My nephew's work is to give it to those who are alive on the earth, not to preach to those who, having died, have come here." We then parted, and I went with H. J. L. through the streets, which seemed fairly full of people, into the college. In his room I found the officer waiting, who, having shaken hands, remarked, "If you're not careful, you'll get so fond of this country that you'll not wish to return to your own." He then took up the story of his life on this side of the grave. Gone West, Chapter 31, The Fate of Children, Transvision and Conversation, May 25, 1914. As in my last vision, I saw the whole landscape on my way to H. J. L., but this time spoke to no one till I was in H. J. L.S. room. As soon as I saw him, I asked, "What is the age limit at which children can enter hell?" I notice that from the account of the officer there are no children in hell proper, and yet they are to be found in the seventh division of hell. H. J. L. answered, "You cannot, of course, fix any exact age limit. Things work much more reasonably than that. Thus if an infant dies who as yet knows nothing of God, it goes to the infant schools in hell, as you know. If it has acquired a vague idea of God and a future life, it will come to our secondary schools in the realm of half-belief. If it has acquired sufficient knowledge it may go to the college, and, finally, boys and girls who have a real living belief may go direct to the realm above this, or occasionally to the highest plane of all. In these cases they will have to complete their education on the intellectual side, although their spiritual side may be well developed. This is, of course, a reversal of what generally happens here. Usually our intellects have been developed largely at the expense of our spiritual functions. Now let us consider the other side. When a child reaches a certain stage in its development, roughly from 5 to 7, it would ordinarily begin to have some general idea as to right and wrong. Now if a child has been badly brought up, or if it inherits a perverse and evil nature from its ancestors, or if obsessed, it may develop very unpleasant characteristics. It may commit serious offenses, and in general may begin to develop badly. Under these circumstances it is cut off very often at the wish of its guide and transferred to the astral plane. There, clear of many of the surroundings which might have dragged it down, it will have an opportunity of developing and of learning sufficient to enable it on leaving the astral plane to come at least to the realm of half-belief. This period of child life stretches roughly from 5 to 12, but, of course, may vary at either end. The third stage is when they are ceasing to be children and becoming adults, especially in the matter of sex. This is a very critical age, and many children unfortunately choose the downward instead of the upward path. The tendency is still, however, for the final decision to be left for the astral plane, and I must remind you that to a certain extent this is always the case. In the case, however, of an adult hardened in sin, the astral simply continues in its new life, repeating the sins of the former, but a youth who has started on the downward path, being less hardened, is more likely to be checked by the shock of death. Further, he is hardly likely to have had time to drive away his guardian angel in the way that a hardened sinner has. Thus even a thoroughly vicious youth will probably see the folly of his ways as soon as he reaches the astral plane, and the vicious habits, not yet being firmly rooted, will be easier to eradicate. On the other hand, if he rejects this second chance and falls into the type of sins represented by obsessing, he will sooner or later be hurled out of his astral body into hell. But when that day comes he or she will no longer be a child, probably not in years, certainly not in spiritual development. Thus you see how it comes about that there are no children in hell. J. W. But there are vicious children of 5 or 6. Gone West, H. J. L. Not many. They may be spoilt, thoughtless, and selfish, but there are few who are really vicious. Further, they too will realize the wickedness of their faults on coming over and seeing them visualize, as we all do. If not sufficiently spiritual to pass straight on to us, they will remain on the astral plane and they'll learn wisdom. If, however, they do not learn wisdom, they will learn folly, but even that will take time to work out its full course, and only when they have become too gross and wicked for the astral plane will they drop to hell. They will have ceased to be children when that happens, but it is seldom that a young child does grow worse on the astral plane. They nearly all improve, And, moreover, the bulk of young children are too spiritual to remain even there, but come almost at once either to the elementary schools in the top division of hell or else to us. But here's the officer. Gone West, Chapter 32, of Animals, and How They Converse with Men, Transvision and Conversation, June 1, 1914. I found myself floating over my body, and then began to whirl away into space,